The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greeting friends around the world. Is the world filled with deaf people? It seems almost everyone is pleading for peace. Prime Minister Wilson of Great Britain pled for peace. President de Gaulle works for peace. President Johnson works for peace. And the Pope pleads for peace. Every great world leader, in every speech about the state of the world or the conditions of a nation, are talking about Vietnam, is talking about peace. Peace talks, about sitting down at the parlay table to discuss terms for peace. The news of much of the world today is of a great leader talking about the possibility of peace. You hear about people sitting down over the conference tables in Geneva to work out disarmament, to talk about peace. But with all of the peace talk, we have precious little of it. It seems no one listens. It seems every proposal goes the way of the ones before. And we don't have very much peace. You hear a lot about peace, but we don't experience very much of it, do we? Here in an article that I have before me in the World's Unique Magazine, 52 pages, full color, absolutely free of charge, is a summarization of 1966 in retrospect. The year that was and the year of war. And then looking on beyond into 1967 and 8 and asking, what are the chances for peace? Now, before you can find what are the chances for peace, you need to find what is the cause of war. What produces it? What causes it? And this article tells you exactly what is the cause of war. Where the very first wars began. What started them? And looking down to the course of modern history into our time as to what produces wars among and between governments and nations today. What is the cause of many of the ills of mankind? That's discussed in this article in the current number of the Plain Truth magazine, 1966, the Year of Violence. You don't need to mention the article, just the magazine, the Plain Truth. It gives you tomorrow's news in advance before it happens. Now, also in this current number that I have before me, the fable of the first fatal flight. That sounds like a tongue twister. It's not. It's telling you how evolutionists, believe it or not, believe that crocodiles are the closest living relatives to our birds of today. Now, you know, I have found many laymen do not even realize that evolution claims birds came from reptiles, that there is a direct link between birds and lizards, and they call it Archaeopteryx. Now, that is one of the dumbest, if you'll permit me to say so, ideas that I've ever heard. And when you study it, it gets dumber the more you look into it. This article tells you what is the actual fossil find, Archaeopteryx, upon which the entire theory is based, regardless as to claims to the contrary. It shows you what is unusual about Archaeopteryx. The idea goes that over uncountable aeons of time, lizards gradually slithered ashore, climbed trees, grew feathers, and learned to fly. And even in comic strip form, this article in the current number of the Plain Truth magazine shows you what might have happened in our artist's imagination when the very first partly feathered lizard leapt off a tree growing out of the side of a cliff. Now, don't let that surprise you, because in the best books you can buy, and there are many quotations from them in this magazine article, in talking about Archaeopteryx, they tell you that it was a crow-sized bird flying over a lake in southern Bavaria, and a sharp gust of wind brought it down. This is in the most up-to-the-moment scientific and erudite expositions about bird biology, ornithology, about evolution. And they tell you that it was quite a tragic flight. A gust brought it down. Well, all we're asking in this article is, what about its ancestors? What about the hundreds of thousands of missing links that went before? They claim Archaeopteryx is a sort of a link between reptiles and birds. You will see with your own eyes the actual fossil. See what evolutionists say about it. See an artist's reconstruction of it. And you will go through, step by step, a logical explanation as to how it might have occurred. Now, you know, from a huge albatross, and an albatross can get so big that it's just exactly like a man 4'11 standing on Lou Alcindor's head. Lou Alcindor, who was a UCLA basketball sensation, for those of you not in the United States who maybe don't follow basketball much, is about 7'1 3/8 inches tall. Now, if you stood a 4'11 man on top of his head, you'd have the wingspread of an albatross. Some of those albatrosses are huge things sailing over the vastness of the Pacific, and then you look at a tiny hummingbird
They can literally stop, hover, and back up in midair if you've ever watched them. And then when you have science telling you, and they admit it's strange, as you will see in some of the quotations in this article, that these birds and all their varieties and sizes came from lizards, and that the closest living relatives to birds today are crocodiles, well, that's kind of a foul hypothesis. One for the birds. And you need to read about it in the current number of the Plain Truth magazine. Because you will see evolutionists as if with one voice admit that while they themselves are not sure, they want you to forget about it and say, well, now that's our province. Don't you worry about it. In spite of the patchiness of our evidence, we expect you to take for granted what we tell you, what you are spoon-fed by evolution. That's an interesting article in the current number of the Plain Truth magazine. Here's a dramatic article from behind the Iron Curtain, inside communist Romania, with full-color pictures from inside Romania. Now, recently we sent four of our staff to the Eastern Bloc countries. They interviewed government, business, and professional people, as well as the man on the street. They found big changes developing in Eastern Europe, of which we have written and spoken for many, many years, relevant to what is occurring behind the scenes in Germany and in Western Europe today. Dynamic change occurring inside Eastern European communist-dominated countries. This article shows you what is happening. Changes taking place there that are going to again alter the map and alter the course of modern history. Our own photos from on the spot in full color on the article inside communist Romania. Remember that Romania is oil rich. Remember Romania, the city of Ploiești, when some of the B-24 liberators bombed it in World War II? Those of you who were around and listening to the news then, one of the major events of World War II, Romania is a country that ought to be considered. Here's an article that talks about it from on the spot, behind the scenes. Now, in this magazine, there is a 3-page radio log for you people in Australia. Whether you're in Latin America, Africa, Europe, or Canada, it will tell you where you can hear this program on perhaps more than one station, or at a different and more comfortable hour somewhere else. Many people listening to a local station may not realize they can get it again at a later time or an earlier time over a station located some distance away. Here's the radio log that shows you where you can hear the world tomorrow around the world. Okinawa, Guam, Asia, all over the world. And here's an article, Where is Germany Headed Now? Written from our German correspondent in Dusseldorf, Germany, and talking about the recent alarming elections inside West Germany, the crises in Bonn that have drawn world attention. And incidentally, as guest lecturer at Ambassador College, a man who has been instrumental in State Department advice over the years regarding the policies concerning West Germany is telling Ambassador College and Ambassador College students about what is happening behind the ominous trends in West Germany today, what the election of Kurt George Kiesinger, Germany's new chancellor, really means, what is behind the Grand Coalition there, and what is the meaning of the NPD. Some of the headlines in the Daily Express, for example, in London, new Nazis win again. The Daily Mail said another triumph for neo-Nazis. The Times, The Sun, The Daily Sketch, they all talked about it. The Mirror said new Nazis stormed a triumph in Poland. This article shows you what's happening from on the spot. Written from West Germany, Dusseldorf. Pictures in full color. Here's another on the spot article written again from the South Pacific. What is behind the secret French atomic program there? With de Gaulle in the South Pacific, news photos scooping the big magazines in full color, close-up of French President Charles de Gaulle speaking at Papeete, Tahiti, before the flag-draped City Hall there. Other pictures, all of them Ambassador College photos, in this current number of the Plain Truth magazine. Here's an article, How You Can Be Happy. People say Happy New Year. People strive for happiness, whether through escapism, pill-taking, alcoholism, drug addiction, or what have you, or simple pleasurable entertainment. But here's an article that shows you how you can be happy every year. And it's not a pull-yourself-up-by-your-bootstraps philosophy about the inner you or just the power of positive thought. This is showing you how you absolutely can be different and your life can be changed by reading this article and doing what it says. The Bible story for children in every number of the Plain Truth magazine. And then also letters to the editor from around the world. Here's the section on prophecy comes alive in today's world news. Now, the Plain Truth is unique. It's absolutely free of charge. We'll send it to you by return mail. There is no gimmick. There is no follow-up. No request for money. No one's going to call on you. Your name is not given to someone else. This current number deals with every facet of life. Articles from around the world showing you what Bible prophecy says will occur. So write for it, and you can have it absolutely free. Now, in this lead article, talking about the problems of this world, you could summarize it by saying the greatest single problem today is government. I know I've said the greatest single problem is the population explosion, but from one point of view, the population explosion, the proliferation of nuclear weapons, the threatening of war, the race problems, the crime and the divorce problems, the sociological problems, in other words, all of these things could be brought under control by a world super government. They really could, if it had the power and the authority to change trends and conditions. And this is said continually by geopoliticians. I have quoted in a series of programs Sir Winston Churchill, President Johnson, many men who have talked about world government as the only possibility for world peace. I have also quoted time and again those men who have said, you've got to get used to living in a time of trial and trouble with no solutions. Former President Kennedy once said at a news conference, we happen to live in the most dangerous time in the history of the human race. We are destined, all of us here today, to live out most, if not all, of our lives in uncertainty and challenge and peril. Now, leading magazines and professors in universities and historians, for instance, Dr. Harrison Brown, professor of geochemistry at the California Institute of Technology, said, the most we can expect by continued vigorous participation in the arms race is a postponement of the fateful day. How, as if with one voice, they all know that taking present trends, walking out into the future with them, mankind is headed toward extinction. They all say world ruling government is the only solution. They say it again and again. Or as former President Roosevelt used to say in his fireside chats, again and again and again. They continually say world ruling government is the only solution to the ills of mankind. And then they turn around and ask, but how? How is world government possible? How can world government ever succeed? Bouffant, Secretary General of the United Nations, has said that each nation is going to have to give up its own private sovereignty, just as an individual must give up his likes and dislikes and desires and conform to laws laid down by his own private society. Will nations ever give up their sovereignty? Now, in the words of one leading geopolitician and an author of books on geopolitics who is quite noted in the field, he admits that geopolitical analysts realize there must soon come some sort of centralized world governing authority administering international laws equally and fairly. The World Peace Through Law movement, for example, before whom Supreme Court Justice Earl Warren appeared and talked about laws to regulate human actions and to cause the decrease in atomic weaponry and to limit the number of nations to join the atomic club and that type of thing. But how effective are such laws among the bickering, squabbling, selfish, and greedy human governments of today? This geopolitician said the nations are not willing to give up their treasured sovereignty even on the smallest points. Take, for example, the breadth of the maritime belt, the amount of water that is claimed as the extension of national territory on the part of many nations. While a number of nations adhere to the principle of a 3-mile limit, they differ. Little Finland, Norway, Sweden, over the objections of other states and nations, claim a breadth of 4 miles for the maritime belt. Italy, Spain, Yugoslavia, and India claim 6 miles, and Mexico claims 9 miles, and little Albania, 10. Ecuador, Iceland, Indonesia, the Soviet Union, the United Arab Republic, and others all claim 12 miles. And would you believe it? Peru claims 200. 200 miles. Now that's kind of a problem for tuna fishermen and so on. Other nations such as Germany, Belgium, France, and Poland claim for protective purposes a so-called contiguous zone beyond the territorial waters proper. And so it's pointed out that even in this one minor way, a smaller point, this lack of precision resulting from the confusing multitude of unilateral claims permeates to a greater or lesser degree most branches of the law of nations. nations simply find themselves unable to cooperate, unable to get together. At best, most alliances hailed as giant strides forward to maintain peace in the world and to maintain some kind of a balance of power last only a few years. You look at NATO, CETO, some of the great alliances of recent years since World War II, and what's happened to them. Look at NATO as a striking example. With the unilateral course of French President Charles de Gaulle, NATO is headed for the rocks, and everyone knows it. With the problems of North Africa, Turkey, the confrontation between the United States and the Soviet Union, the insistence upon those nations to withdraw American nuclear tactical weapons and the strategic air command air bases and airplanes from Turkey, from North Africa and the like, the United States finds itself tenaciously hanging on to bases in Spain. And recently they celebrated the year's anniversary at the event of Palomares, where the bomber collided with a tanker and H-bombs were dumped in the area, one of them into the sea, one of the most famous and the most extensive and incidentally the most costly rescue operations in the history of mankind occurred there and caused an upset around the world. Caused giant problems between and among nations because of the screams from some of the other countries, the communists trying to make hay over the accident, to try to get the Spanish government to oust American nuclear bombs and American nuclear bombers. Now, in the meantime, Spain wants Gibraltar, so this shows you how the problems begin to mount up. But Britain wants to hang on to Gibraltar. But the United States wants to keep bases in Spain. But Britain wants the United States to take over the lion's share of the defenses of the Indian Ocean, because Britain's been kicked out of Ceylon and is getting kicked out of Aden and Yemen, and Britain has already been kicked out of Suez. And furthermore, Britain can't afford it and knows it, because economically and militarily, she's now a third-rate power and may be headed lower. So the problems are, the United States says, look, Britain, and I'm putting this in my own vernacular, of course. I don't have any quote for this. I'm just saying this seems to be the way people play teeter-totter, the balance of power in the world. You get out of Gibraltar and give it back to Spain, and we'll take the lion's share of the defenses of Asia, where the United States is increasingly involved these days. And so this is the way it seems to work, and everywhere you look, we've got problems. And nations are not willing to give up the slightest bit of their private sovereignty, and even the best alliances, hailed and cheered and seemingly really going to pay off, last only a short time. Now NATO is headed for the rocks, and here we see Germany with the largest army in NATO outside of that of the United States. We see a rearmed, reindustrialized, revitalized, resurgent West Germany beginning to move and to make demands and to stand up and to be heard in world affairs, and people don't seem to realize what it means. The biggest single problem in the world today is the problem of government. How to achieve a world ruling government? How to achieve a world super government that would have the power to intervene and to enforce international law? This is an absolutely insoluble problem in the hands of man, and government leaders admit it. They say it over and over again. Now, I have before me a booklet that shows you how world government is possible. It's not a movement. It's not something you need to join. It isn't going to ask you to march on a world capital or to have a demonstration or a teach-in or a sit-in. It doesn't really give a hang whether people accept it or reject it. It's going to happen anyhow, but this booklet is the master plan for peace. It's not talking about anything humans are going to do. It's talking about a master plan mapping out the course of future peace on this earth in spite of human actions, over and above human actions. Now let's just put two and two together and realize that you are left, if you are a rational thinking creature, with only two alternatives. One, based upon every current trend and condition and known fact in human experience today, one is humanity is, if we continue in the direction we have been going for nearly 6,000 years of recorded history, humanity is doomed to extinction. Or there is an all-wise, divine God in heaven above who does exist and will soon intervene in human experience and human actions. These are your only two alternatives. Now, it's not somebody in the barber chair on the courthouse steps or standing around sunning himself on a Sunday afternoon with a cigar in his face philosophizing about the problems of the world who says we need world-ruling government. The greatest thinkers on the face of the earth have said it. I can quote such men as former Prime Minister Sir Anthony Eden, as former Prime Minister Sir Winston Churchill, as a whole line of presidents and government leaders in many, many countries who have said it over and over again, and who continually say it, that world-ruling government, a super-world government, is the only solution, or else humanity is doomed to extinction. These are your only alternatives. Now, whether you want to face it or not is up to you. Whether you want to decide that's rather academic and disagree with it and hide behind the cynicism of this modern age is entirely up to you. I'm not trying to get you to join something or accept something or agree with something. I am warning you. I'm telling you what is going to happen, and I'm telling you that this world is about to come crashing down around our ears, but that there is a place of protection for those who will listen and will become a part of the great work that is telling this world about what is soon going to occur. There is a God, and you can prove it. Now, at this time, perhaps the question seems a little academic, and we treat it that way for the sake of people who perhaps need to treat it academically. We show you how there are some giant wedges you can drive between the broad, yawning gaps in the hideous theory of evolution. And we do it patiently and painstakingly, scientifically and carefully, thoroughly, and with plenty of research, and even in cartoon form so laymen can understand it, in the pages of the Plain Truth magazine. But let me tell you this. You don't have very much longer to sit around and think that the existence of God, or whether or not God is dead or is alive, is an academic question that you can prove with pen and paper. Because very soon now, that great God is going to leave no doubt in the minds of any human being on the face of this earth. He does exist, and people saying, no, he doesn't, yes, he does, are not going to change the facts one way or the other. There is a great master plan mapped out. Isn't it a rather strange coincidence, my friends, that we are right now near the end, any way you want to slice it, any way you want to add it up, by using any calendar, pagan, Christian, or what that you want to use, that we are right now near the end of 6,000 years of recorded history? Who is it who made the weekly cycle? Who is it who made this earth rotate and the moon around the earth and the two of them around the sun once a year? Who put these things in orbit and in motion? Who is it who set the seasons, the day and the night and the week? In this great master plan for peace, the Bible, it shows the weekly cycle as a direct example, a direct pattern of a great purpose, a great plan that is being worked out here below, and that we have been given 6,000 years to learn some of the most inescapable and absolutely unalterable lessons that human beings are utterly incapable of governing themselves and achieving peace and having real happiness and security and safety and joy and abundance. Say it any way you want to, the things we all really want, regardless of how chic we may be, regardless as to how many of the earthly goods and possessions we may have. I don't care how hostile, I don't care how acidic, I don't care how chic, how caustic, how crass we become. In our private moments, every last one of us knows that we want an absence of pain, that we don't want suffering, sickness, and disease. We don't want our joints aching and our muscles cramping. We don't want to feel aches and pains and bruises and debilities and sicknesses and fevers and diseases. We don't want suffering and agony and death. No, we want the good things in life that we like to say are free. Well, then why do we run in the exact opposite direction? People want the good things in life, and they run in the exact opposite direction away from them. We want good marriages, and people won't prepare for marriage, admit the responsibility of marriage, or follow the laws that will make a successful marriage. We want good physical health, so we wreck our bodies, pollute our minds. We poke into our face anything that seems to appeal to us by its color and taste and scent, not realizing it may be filled with all kinds of poisons. And you know, and it's a fact, that in the United States, new people listening in Australia, Great Britain, I don't know what your statistics are, but it's kind of bad. I look at you on the streets when I'm in those countries, and you look about as sick as we do. And that's a fact. But every time you see 10 Americans 45 years of age and over, 7 of them are suffering from a chronic disease. That's fact. 7 out of 10 living Americans of both sexes 45 years of age and older are suffering from a chronic disease. You call that good health? Now, we want good health. We want an absence of pain. We want everything that is good, well-being, comfort, happiness, joy. But we don't know how to get it. There is a cause that will produce those things. And that cause is found in a book that a lot of you ought to blow the dust off of, open up and look into. You've got a lot of opinions about it. You think, oh, the Bible says this or that, and you know what you're talking about. I mean, if you'll admit it to yourself, you don't. I've noticed a few people, they're kind of like a guide in a jungle. They maybe know 2 or 3 trails and about 6 or 8 water holes or something, and they're a professional guide to guide people down the jungle trail to shoot some kind of a wild animal. But don't ever get them off the trail or you're all lost and really in trouble. And that's like some people with the Bible. They maybe know John 3:16, and maybe they can quote 1 or 2 chapters, or they think they've seen this or that, but when you find 54% of American professing church-going Christians can't tell you the names of the first 4 books of the New Testament in order, and yet they can get purple-veined and gnash their teeth and get real glandular about their religious convictions, and they've got absolutely not one shred of proof for it. It's an amazing thing, an amazing commentary on the human mind. There is a plan mapped out in the Bible for world peace based upon the week, the weekly cycle. It talks about a 1,000-year period of world government. The whole purpose in human life expressed in the life and the ministry of Jesus Christ is to inherit a governing, ruling, world-ruling family, and to be born into that family, to be changed and perfected and become a member of a ruling family of people. Actually, not of people, but changed into something a lot higher. And the amazing thing is that so few people seem to know it. Now look at as I've said the last couple of programs, look at this fantastic thing of the observance of Easter. And you ought to investigate that. But here are millions of people who observe a custom called by an ancient pagan goddess of fertility and sex. That's why they have eggs and bunnies, incidentally, but few people seem to know that. Bunnies don't lay eggs, but bunnies are very prolific, and of course eggs are a sign of life, and the pagans used to worship signs of life and sex and so on. And so we have our kitties with their little bunny rabbits and chocolate eggs and whatnot today, and we don't know why we do it. Nobody ever thought to look it up, but the neighbors do it, so we think we should. Well, maybe you better ask about that, too. Well, ostensibly, people are trying to say by Easter they believe Christ is alive and he walked out of the tomb. Well, then why don't they believe what he says? Where is he? What's he been doing ever since? That's a part of it. You'll read it all in this book, The Wonderful World Tomorrow. What will it be like? Here is that master plan for peace I'm talking about, mapped out for you in plain layman's language, and with inside of it a could-be newspaper that gives you such tremendous headlines you can't believe it. And yet it's going to occur. Total disarmament, language reforms, hospital properties up for sale, no sick anymore. If you want a glimpse of the way this world can be and will be, then write for this booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. Request the booklet on the resurrection and the Plain Truth magazine. Write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. These are free of charge. There is no price. Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.